and the possibility to talk. So we are in a conference on holographic cosmology.
So what is the connection with what I'm talking about? The connection is that there is not so much connection, but if you want to find the connection. okay, there is some connection. So it turns out that it seems that there is some connection between holography, which is clearly poorly understood, and the null energy condition. The null energy condition is a condition on inequality on the stress energy tensor, which says that for every null vector, this quantity is positive with k null. There are various ways to see it, and sometimes this kind of inequality is used, for example, to prove that the area of black holes grows. And if you look at theories which violate this inequality, you can run into some paradox, which is not completely. It says that maybe there is something wrong about these theories. What I will talk about is from a very phenomenological point of view. I will describe theories which violate this null energy condition. So, if you want, they, in some sense, they go against holography, if really holography requires this inequality. I will focus on the phenomenology of quintessence, or if you want, I'm exploring the possibility that quintessence violates the null energy condition, and the null energy condition in an FRW universe is equivalent to the fact that W should be larger than minus one, the equation of state parameter. So I'm going to consider to entertain the possibility that quintessence violates this and has W less than minus one. So this is discussed in this paper, but the discussion about the violation of an energy condition was in this paper, and I think Alberto will also say something about this in tomorrow. So we know that since it's 11 years that the universe is accelerating from 1998. And it's a very well settled situation. So there is a compelling evidence not only from supernovae but from other observations. And we know that this requires a quite not everyday kind of matter, which makes these negative. And if you look at the present data, you see that really data are converging to a cosmological constant. So cosmological constant is W equal to minus one in this plot. Probably the most, I don't want to defend too much quintessence against the cosmological constant. Probably the cosmological constant is the best explanation of the acceleration, but we know that it has maybe some conceptual problem, or at least we're getting used to it, but it's still true that there is some we didn't expect too much this number. So, I will be completely open-minded, and I will study quintessence in a very general form, without trying to choose which model is the best or something like this. I'm doing basically the opposite. I will try to study in some generality quintessence. Here, by quintessence, I mean something which is described by single scalar field. I'm not requiring that there is a particular Lagrangian. Actually, I'm going to scan over the whole possibilities. I'm just focusing on something which is described by single scalar field, and I'm trying to see what I can do with this, and in particular, if I can violate the null energy condition. Notice that clearly quintessence means that the equation of state parameter will not be equal to minus one, so a deviation in this plot from the cosmological constant prediction. And on top of this, it predicts that this fluid is not spatially homogeneous. So there is an issue of perturbations, how perturbations behave in the presence of how quintessence perturbation behaves once you have fixed the background evolution. Okay. So I will try to study in generality what is the behavior of perturbations of quintessence varying the equation of state parameter. In particular, try to understand how one should interpret this data once you go below W less than minus one, because I mean, it's not even clear how you feed this data if you don't have a theory which gives you W less than minus one. Okay, so the outline will be to again to study the theory of perturbations of quintessence around a given cosmological background, and to see why, I mean, if it's possible to go below the cosmological constant line. In particular, I mean, it's clear that if you stick with a single with a simple scalar field Lagrangian, this gives W larger than minus one, so you have to do something, you have to play a bit if you want to get below this line. And in the literature, there was also a lot of discussion about the so-called phantom divide. The phantom divide is the line, I mean, it's a possibility to cross, to evolve from a normal to an high energy violating equation of state. At the end, we see that this issue is related to the speed of sound of perturbations, and in particular, we'll be led to say something about the phenomenology of quintessence in the limit of very small speed of sound, which I think it's an interesting topic, and we have some results, but it's something that should be explored because it has a phenomenology quite different from the usual case, and in some sense, it can be consider the phenomenology of a model which violates the line energy condition. Okay, so, if there is time at the end, I will have a more sophisticated and way to derive the most generic action. Now I will go through in the simplest and most direct way. So let me start from a k-essence Lagrangian. A Lagrangian which depends in general on the field and on d phi squared. Okay, so I don't want to commit to a given Lagrangian, so actually I want to be completely generic, and then we'll see that this is not enough. We'll have to add additional operators in some particular limit, but for the moment we start with this. So the idea is you take this Lagrangian, you have your FRW metric, you solve for the stress energy tensor for this metric, and then you want to study perturbations around this solution. Okay. So in principle, you can do it in any way. I claim that a convenient parameterization of the perturbations can be done in the following way. So if phi zero of t is the unperturbed solution, I perturbed in this way my solution. So as we'll see later, You can see this as some way of Goldstone of the broken time diffeomorphism. So in some sense, it's the time shift that restore diff invariance. But anyway, so it's a way to describe perturbations of this field. And then you take this perturbation, you plug it back, and you have your Lagrangian at second order, or if you need at higher order. Now, you can play a bit with this formula, and the interesting thing is to rewrite this action in a more transparent form. So you have to use the background equation of motion and do some trick. At the end, you end up with a Lagrangian of this form. So what is the advantage of this? You see that I rewrote what appears in the quadratic Lagrangian as a function of the background quantities, rho quintessence and the pressure of quintessence. So you see that some of these terms are just fixed as a function of the background evolution. Okay, so in particular, for example, you see that independently of the Lagrangian I start with, this term, which describes the coupling of quintessence, quintessence perturbation with the metric with H, I'm using in this synchronous gauge, so the perturbation is just in the spatial part of the metric. So you see that perturbation are fixed, so I cannot play with this term. I mean, it's just fixed by the background evolution. Okay, so this tells me very, very transparently the fact that if I have a fluid which deviates from W equal to minus one, this means that I cannot turn off perturbation. So if you want deviation from a cosmological constant, implies that perturbations are sourced by gravity. Okay, so I cannot switch off perturbation. So this, just to say that if you want to compare with data, you cannot pick up a generic equation of state for your quintessence and switch off perturbations. This is not a gauge invariant statement, first of all, and you see from the Lagrangian that it's not consistent with your equations. Okay, so what else do we see? Well, what is the purpose of this? Well, the point I want to make is that this is the form one should start with, in the sense that this function rho plus p of t and the function which appears here, m to the fourth, both are in general function of time, are completely unconstrained. In the sense, I can start, I mean, I can always, once you give me these two functions, okay, you give me the background evolution, and on top of this, you give me this function, and this function, if you want, is related to the speed of sound of perturbation, comparing the two parts of the kinetic term. So once you give me the two functions, if I want, I can always go back and write a Lagrangian describing this system. A Lagrangian, in particular, you can check that this Lagrangian, a function of phi and x, gives me exactly the background evolution that I want and the speed of sound that I want. Okay, so. And in particular, it gives me phi equal to t as a solution. Okay, so this is just to say that, I mean, it's a bit cumbersome to start with different Lagrangian every time and see what happens. At the end, you can directly start with this, which describes what you want, perturbations around your quintessence solution. In particular, in this language, there are no theory definition ambiguities. So clearly, you can have the same Lagrangian and do a theory definition. You get a new Lagrangian, which is equivalent. But from the point of view of expanding perturbations, this is not very clear because you have to, because it's a different Lagrangian. But in this formalism, it's, everything is written as a function of observable quantities, the background evolution and the speed of sound. Okay. Yes. No, thanks. So if you want, this is related to what I was saying. This form of the Lagrangian that I'm giving you has this background. I mean, if you take this Lagrangian and you look at perturbations, you get this Lagrangian, and you get as a background rho plus p, and on top of this, you get this particular solution for the background. So if you want, this is a particular choice of this theory definition, which gives me this a solution. Okay, so if you want, given if you start with a general Lagrangian, I can write down everything, work out, da, da, da. At the end, once I know the solution, I can say, okay, let me do the theory definition, which goes in this, and it will turn out to be this Lagrangian. So this is an example, I mean, just to say that I think this is just more transparent, and there is always the possibility of casting in this form. Okay, so what do I want to do with this formula? Well, I want to see what I can do now that I wrote down the most generic thing. So, thanks, sorry. You are right, sorry, I didn't mention. I'm assuming, for doing this, I'm assuming that the phi of t is monotonic. And this is a good point. No, exactly. Yeah, this is not completely generic. I mean, for quintessence, usually it's the case. Yes, this will be related, if I have time in the discussion at the end, with the fact that I can get this Lagrangian also directly working in unitary gauge. So I'm assuming, if you want, that quintessence is a good time slice on my space-time. So thanks. Okay, so the... Okay, let me see what are the implication of this formula. Well, first of all, I want to be I don't want ghosts in my theory, so I want a positive time kinetic term. Okay, in particular, I don't want a ghost of this form, like with a wrong sign of the of a standard kinetic term. This obviously would give me W less than minus one because it has a completely wrong sign of the Hamiltonian. But I don't want this this instability. Well, classically, this kind of instability I mean, is there because I have two different parts of my theory as a different sign of the energy. So clearly, there is a possibility of exchanging energy between positive and negative energy states. Notice that people are using this kind of Lagrangian to make, for example, the fit that I was showing you. Showing at the beginning for W less than minus one. If you run your code, it's not that you run, it doesn't crash. It doesn't crash because this pathology it's only there. I mean, if you restrict to large cosmological scales and until the linear theory remains valid, this kind of instability is not. It's not in your code, so it's not that something bad happens. On the other hand, the theory is unstable on short scales, and this is particularly evident quantum mechanically. Quantum mechanically, the vacuum is unstable. You can have processes in which you create ghosts and normal particles, and the decay rate, even if you have a Planck suppressed coupling, is given by a formula like this, And moreover, it's even worse because this kind of cutoff cannot be Lorentz invariant. The reason is that basically this process, as it starts from the vacuum, can be boosted. So if I can produce soft phi and gamma, then with a Lorentz boost, I can also generate very high energy gamma and phi. So there is no way to cut this process off by a Lorentz invariant cutoff. So the system is very unstable and with a formally infinite decay rate. Although maybe if I look at linear perturbation at the classical level, I don't see it. It's very pathological. So I want to avoid this. So let me. I will show many times this plane. I want to summarize what I say in this plane, in which I have the speed of sound of perturbations. And here I have the equation of state multiplied for reasons that I will explain by omega, which is the density contribution of quintessence. I call it quintessential plane. And so obviously these are two observables in principle. In principle, we can observe these, the equation of state, and also through the dynamics of perturbations, I can get some information about the speed of sound. So what I said about ghosts cut off these two regions because, as I said, so I want this to be positive. So this means that the speed of sound has the same sign of 1 plus W. So I cannot live in these two quadrants. So this quadrant is the standard one. I mean, I have positive speed of sound and 1 plus W positive. And in particular, usually I have CS squared equal to 1. So I sit in some place here. Okay, so let me point out some other possible constraints in this plane. So one possibility is to have a quintessence field with the speed of light, speed of propagation of perturbations larger than one. And this implies, you see that playing with this parameter, I can make it larger than one. So what this would imply? Well, it would imply as you can imagine, but I refer to these two papers, and you can ask Albert that he's here. So the point is that if I have a theory, I mean, you do not run immediately into paradoxes, like killing your grandmothers, things like that. But as you can imagine, there is no Lorentz invariant UV completion of this theory. Okay. So again, this is another example in which I can study this theory. There is no obvious pathology, but on the other hand, there is some hint that maybe something is fundamentally wrong in the sense that I cannot easily go to the UV and having the usual Lorentz structure. So there is something strange. So if potentially you can observe this, if you observe something like this, this would be a strong indication of something. Yes.
Curves, right?
Wait, I think there is some additional assumption, but I'm not completely... okay, that, I know that there are not CTCs because if you want, the pretesting itself defines a given time slicing. So so all these paradoxes, I mean, when it, okay, I don't know too much about the paper you asked, but what I want to say is that usually to run into, to create CTCs, to run into these paradoxes, you need at a certain point to boost the system to come back with the light signal. And this is not possible in this frame because there is a preferred frame that defined by the quintessence. So as far as I know, you cannot form CTCs.
Well, around this particular background, no. Perhaps you can come up with more complicated solutions. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that would say that those backgrounds could have problems. Right? So that would be a background dependent especially. Some backgrounds may want, some others may not.
Yeah. So I think in this background that you
could not run into pathologies like CTCs, but still, I mean, it's an important theoretical constraint. Okay, so let me go on. So as we said, we want to go below this line. We want to violate an analogy condition. Well, we want. I mean, we're trying to see if it's possible. So so you see from this formula that in this region you get a gradient instability. So this term has the wrong sign. So I have a potential danger. There is a gradient instability, which means that modes are not ghosts, but they tend to grow in time instead of oscillates. So this is a particular example of a more general analysis that that you can do. So, and again, I refer to these two papers, in particular the second one, in which there is a more general proof of a link between the violation of an analogy condition and the presence of instabilities. This is not the end of the story because, you know, an instability is important depending on the time scale, in the sense that everything is unstable. So we have to think about what is the typical time scale of this instability. And clearly, if you want to live in this region, you would like to suppress the speed of sound to have a very small negative speed of sound squared, but quite small in such a way that the instability is very slow. Now, so let me. No, in general, no. But so if you take this formula at the face value, you can say the same thing because you can say if I go to very UV modes, these UV modes they will have a very UV, a very fast instability rate. So, I mean, what I'm going to is first of all to make these very suppressed. And then to consider higher dimension operators which stabilize. So in some sense, I don't want this formula to hold in the UV, and I want to. I mean, this is, I will show you. But the point is that I want to suppress because you know I only know the sign of this. So in principle, I can have these to be as small as you like, and at a certain point when this becomes very small, I will have also to consider higher dimension operators. Well, you see, the problem is okay. So, okay. So, what you can do? So, if you come back to the ghost, I mean, of course, you can modify your theory in the UV. As I said, again, this is, again, not compatible with Lorentz invariant, in the sense you can say this graph holds but only a sufficiently low energy, and at a certain point I cut this divergence off. On the other hand, I cannot do it in a Lorentz invariant way. You see what I mean? I'm just saying that this instability, imagine that I have a soft instability of creating two ghosts and two gamma, at very, very low energy, so it's inside my theory, then I can, if Lorentz invariance is correct, I can boost this theory, this, and this must be inside my effective theory because it's the same process, just boosted, and so I can get a very energetic production of ghosts and gamma. So I cannot, I'm just saying that I cannot cut off this instability just adding new states in a standard Lorentz invariant theory. I have to do something more clever.
You can resolve those in a Lorentz invariant?
Yes, so you see, I mean, it's a, yes.
Could the spatial invariant trace Lorentz invariants by changing the sign on just one part of the invariant?
So you're saying that I'm already considering a background in which Lorentz invariants is local. Yes, so that's a good point. In fact, that if you really want to complete this theory, and one thing that you can do, it's true that there are ubiquitous completion of theory with ghosts with a very low top. And the idea is that the background itself, which breaks Lorentz invariants, cut this off. Yes, so it's possible. Yes, So, But you have to live with a very low cut. But in principle, you can have a theory which is unstable. So you have this production of particles and the sufficiently low cut of the instability is low enough. I mean, if you want the details, in some sense, these theories are the same as what I'm going to say, but with also the wrong sign of a time kinetic term. So if you want, they are very related. Okay, so you can say turning off the speed of sound is so you can fine tune the speed of sound to be very very small. So what is interesting is that the small C square limit is a point of enhanced symmetry, and you can see it because in the limit in which the speed of sound goes to zero, which is the same as setting this to go to zero, then there is a, if you look at the Lagrangian, there is an asymmetry, a shift symmetry on pi. Well, this is another way of saying that we have a theory which starts from a Lagrangian of this form, which without dependence on pi. Then, in particular cases, I mean, depending on what is this function, you can have what is called the Gauss condensate solution, in which you end up not as you expect in expanding universe to a zero speed of sound. You are not driven to a zero speed of sound, but you are driven to a point of constant speed, and this is a solution of the equation of motion if there is a minimum of this function, and the stress energy tensor in this solution is this term disappears because of this condition. So you have a solution in which the stress energy tensor is the one of a cosmological constant. So this is a point of an asymmetry because everything is fixed is imposed by the fact that there is no dependence on phi in this Lagrangian. So it's a consequence of a shift symmetry in this Lagrangian, which is a consequence which at the level of perturbation is seen as a shift symmetry on pi. So what I'm saying is that if you consider this Gauss condensing limit, which at least is radically stable in the sense that there are symmetries that can enforce this limit, and you start deforming around this, there is a way to keep the speed of sound sufficiently small. So it's not only a fine tuning, it's just to start from this particular limit and deforming the theory a little bit. So clearly, at this point you run into some trouble because you don't have a standard. If this is very very small, the theory has no spatial kinetic term. So you have to consider higher dimension operators. So around this particular point, by symmetry, there is no standard kinetic term, spatial kinetic term. So clearly, the theory will be sensitive to the next operator. I can be more general, but let me just consider an operator of this form. I'm adding this operator in this particular way, just because this operator does not change the ground solution, but only affects perturbation. So in a sense, I can always rearrange my operators
But if I want to keep the same background solution and just modify the behavior of perturbation, this particular combination does the job. So it doesn't change the it's quadratic, and this term vanishes on the evolution. So it's just a way to change the evolution of perturbations, but not the background. So this term contains higher derivatives, and so for the time higher derivatives is not an issue. They will be treated as higher derivative corrections, because if you compare this term with the standard kinetic term that we have in the previous transparency, these will be suppressed with these until the energies becomes of order m, and m is basically the cutoff of my theory. So the new modes will enter at scale of order m. But clearly, this term will be very relevant, because it's the first spatial kinetic term. So I will have, in this Gauss condensing limit, I will have a dispersion relationship of this form. And now I start perturbing around the solution. I start having a small speed of sound, but not exactly. I don't want to remain in this limit, because in this limit W is exactly equal to minus one, but then I can start tilting a little bit. And the good point is that at least these corrections will remain small, so it's a perturbation around an enhanced symmetry point. Okay, now I have to check whether my system is stable. I have to look first of all at the instability we were talking about, so the instability coming from the negative sign of this. Okay, this clearly is an issue of how close I am to this enhanced symmetry point. At the Gauss condensing limit, this vanishes, so I have to take this small compared to the typical scale of my effective theory. And if you work out the algebra, it turns out that it gives an equality like this. So I'm requiring the instability rate to be slower than the Hubble scale. Okay. So you get an instability of this form. But then you also realize that there is another instability, which comes from the fact that instead of here I'm only looking at perturbation of quintessence, not coupled with gravity, but obviously gravity is around. And in particular, if I look at my Lagrangian, I will have mixing between pi and the metric of this form coming from the new operator that I'm considering. So I have to take also this into account. I have this is the equation of motion, then I can use Einstein's equation to solve for h dot. So I end up with a new instability, which is very similar to a Jeans instability. So it's an instability related to the fact that you couple with gravity, and then you it's very similar to the Jeans instability of a fluid, and it has this form. So the two instabilities that they go in opposite direction. This one prefers large values of your scales of your effective theory. Here they prefer large values. Here they prefer small values, if you want these to be smaller than h squared. So there is some tension. There is a window, but it's tiny, in the sense it's not a parametric window. So you see that if 1 plus w is not so small and omega q is not so small, this window is not parametric, so both sides are of order 1. Now, the situation actually is much better, and this estimate is very conservative, because the reason is that I'm just imposing that all the possible instabilities are larger than h. But you also to check whether these instabilities are induced by sources. Okay. The first thing is that all the sources will start moving in this Gauss condensate. So if you put a source and you wait an Hubble time, you will start developing instabilities. But then every source moves in with respect to the preferred cosmological frame, and this suppresses a lot the effect. So the instability is much slower. And there are also other effects related to nonlinearities. Anyway, so it turns out that these estimates are probably very conservative by orders of magnitude, and I refer to this paper in which they study the Gauss condensate limit, to say that, I mean, there is some tension, but I mean, it's very relaxed. Yeah. No, I mean, I until this point, I will discuss later. So if you talk about these genes instability, they do not behave like dark matter in the sense that, okay, you see from this, so this is an instability only at short scales. In the sense, this fluid, it's a bit unintuitive because of this strange dispersion relationship, but it's genes unstable only on short scales. Short, I mean, very far from cosmology. At that scales, yes. I mean, it depends on what you mean, but I mean, it's unstable in the same way than the coupling with.
Some parameter that controls that. So that,
yeah,
that confuses my intuition.
But the confusion comes from the fact that I call it genes instability because it's always related to writing down the Lagrangian for the fluid and then coupling to gravity. But here, the coupling with gravity is very different because it comes from this operator. The point is that the mixing with gravity comes both from this operator and from the operator proportional to rho plus p. The operator proportional to this. So in this limit, this operator vanishes. So this instability is created in a different way from a normal fluid. So without that, yeah. Which is also, I mean, it's also, if you want, the mixing with gravity is coming from this higher derivative term, so the intuition is a bit different. Okay, so coming back to the plane, so there is some limit. It's difficult, I mean, at least parametrically, I cannot make the violation of an energy condition as big as I want. Well, phenomenologically, this is not relevant because this line is probably very, I mean, there is a quite large window, so it's not something which is interesting for data, but it's true that there is some limit at which, I mean, of you cannot violate this, you cannot go down in this plane too much because you have to face the two instabilities. But this is not an issue for realistic value of 1 plus w. So let's try to understand what is the phenomenology from the point of view of comparing with data of a quintessence of this form. Well, there are two limits. One in which the theory really behaves like the original Gauss condensate, in which this higher derivative spatial term is relevant. So in this limit, let's first see when this happens. Well, I have to compare the two kinetic terms, the two spatial kinetic terms, and ask whether these or these dominate at Hubble scales for cosmological wavelengths. Well, it turns out that for these to dominate at these scales, you need to be very, very close to this line. As you imagine, you must be very, very close to the Gauss condensate limit. But this ratio is much smaller than one, obviously. And so you need to be really very close to the cosmological constant line in a way which is not distinguishable experimentally. No? So in this limit, everything goes like a Gauss condensate. You don't see any deviation from a cosmological constant background. And the dynamics is the one of a Gauss condensate, which has an interesting phenomenology, but as Nayesh was saying, only at short scales. So it's not a cosmological modification. You have a modification of gravity possibly at short scales. So this is not so interesting from the point of view of quintessence phenomenology. So the other limit, it's clearly for all reasonable value of this quantity, negative, you are in the other limit in which you are dominated by this term. But clearly the speed of sound is still very, very small. So how small is this speed of sound? Well, you can put all the constraints I was talking about, in particular the constraint on gradient instability. And if you plug in the number, it turns out that the speed of sound must be tremendously small, like 10 to minus 30. I mean, because if you want, a large separation between this UV scale, this scale of your effective field theory, and this scale, which is h squared and Planck squared. So if you think that this is a scale of order electron volt, 10 to minus 3 electron volt to the fourth, I mean, clearly, if this theory is this scale is higher, as it should be, then the speed of sound is very, very small. So you really have to think about this theory as the limit in which the speed of sound effectively is zero for all practical purposes. So we are led to consider a fluid with zero speed of sound, but with an equation of state 1 plus w less than minus 1. Okay, so let me go briefly through this. So in the literature, there was a lot of discussion about this phantom divide, which is this line w equal to minus 1. And people were a bit confused about the possibility of crossing this this divide. I mean, maybe it's not so relevant to go into details. So clearly, there are various things that, I mean, here I wrote the equation describing the same system in terms of the fluid equation, in terms of the energy density contrast and the velocity potential. So, and here in synchronous gauge. So you see that when 1 plus w goes to 0, various pieces can go, various things can go wrong. For example, this term diverges. So the adiabatic speed of sound, which is defining in this way, also diverges. So it's possible that, I mean, if you put this equation in your code, there are some possible divergences. But it turns out that they are all that there is no divergence once the speed of sound clearly goes to zero when I cross the divide. Okay, that's the point. But as you saw, this is implied by writing down the equation for the scalar. So it's not something that I have to put by hand. So if I force the speed of sound to remain different from zero at the divide, then I can run into troubles because this term will diverge. But in general, I don't have problems. Of course, I have to be careful that once I am in the null energy condition violating region, instabilities are under control. So the bottom line of this is that you can safely put in your code a null energy violating quintessence, but you have to put the speed of sound equal to zero. And but you can see also from the original Lagrangian that crossing this phantom divide line is not problematic. At this point, this term vanishes, and you are left, if you want, with a pure Gauss condensate theory. In the sense, you erase all the terms, and you are left with the Gauss condensate limit. But as this region in green is very, very tiny, effectively, you remain in this green region for an infinitesimal time. So effectively, it's like going from a positive to negative speed of sound. And if you want, you can also write explicit examples of Lagrangian crossing the phantom divide and study what happens to the speed of sound. So clearly, the speed of sound must remain very, very small, but you can cross. I mean, it's interesting because I mean, the plot I was showing at the beginning. Usually, people do this simulation with speed of sound equal to one, which, as we saw, it's a bit. I mean, it's not theoretically well motivated. So the prescription is that putting C squared equal to zero is at least more under control from the theory point of view. Okay, so let me come to some phenomenology. So we are trying now to understand better the phenomenology of this fluid. So it's a limit where the speed of sound is equal to zero. So I will focus on this regime in the sense I said that for tremendously small value of 1 plus w, the theory behaves like the Gauss condensate. But let me stick to this, I mean, the phenomenologically, what is more interesting is the regime in which this value is quite different from zero, so that the fluid behaves like a fluid with zero speed of sound. So you can work out easily. So now we are interested to know, for example, if I have a dark matter well, which start forming a dark matter halo, how quintessence reacts to this. Okay. Usually, quintessence usually is thought to have speed of sound equal to one. So in this limit, is not so interesting because the dark matter forms, but the speed of sound is so high that basically there is no clustering of dark energy at any scale, effectively. So, but in this case, it's completely different. And in fact, you can write this equation. So, if you are still in matter domination, so you can see that quintessence cluster together with dark matter, and you get a formula of this kind. So, if you want, quintessence traces dark matter inhomogeneities. In a way which is proportional to 1 plus w. Again, remember that the term coupling gravity with quintessence is proportional to 1 plus w, so I expect to have 1 plus w here. The funny thing is that for 1 plus w negative, this is negative compared to this, so there is an anticorrelation, which comes from the fact that this fluid has a strange equation of state, so it falls into dark matter wells, but it has some negative sign of the energy. So from the point of view of energy, you see that there is an anticorrelation between dark matter overdensities and quintessence overdensities. So it's, but the interesting thing is that really quintessence participates in structure formation. So it starts following in the dark matter wells. So, just to tell you something about data, so here is the plot, just to as a function of the speed of sound. So this speed of sound equal to one, which is the standard case. We will be very here. So in the sense, you have to think about the limit in which the speed of sound goes to zero. Here, in this paper, they show the difference between the Newtonian potential in for a smooth quintessence and for a clustering quintessence with different speed of sound. So what happens clearly is that if the speed of sound is large, the difference is only at very large scales. Okay, so it's only in this region, but as soon as I go inside the Hubble radius, it goes to zero. So effectively, on short scales, quintessence is completely smooth. But if the speed of sound becomes smaller and smaller, you have a difference in the Newtonian potential also at short scales. So these, so usually people, they are interested in regimes of speed of sound which are one or a bit less, but they are not really pushing to speed of sound equal to zero. So this is what we're trying to understand better. So you may ask, okay, so can we distinguish I mean, it's a well-defined experimental question. Can we distinguish C squared equal to zero from C squared equal to one? Or better, until which value of one plus W we can distinguish them? Because at a certain point, if one plus W is the cosmological constant, there is no effect. So all the effects goes to zero in the limit one plus W going to zero. One possibility studied in this paper is the ISW galaxy correlation. And you see that the effect is quite different for speed of sound equal to zero and speed of sound equal to one. Well, the simple explanation is the fact that there is for speed of sound equal to one, you can forget about clustering, and all the effects are coming from the variation of the Newtonian potential while the photon is reaching us. So clearly, when the background start deviating for matter dominance, there is an ISW effect, and the ISW effect depends on W. But on top of this, for speed of sound equal to zero, there are also quintessence perturbations, so there is an additional effect which allows to separate the two cases. At the moment, the constraints are tremendously weak, so basically we have no idea. There is no separation between these two, but as far as I understand, in the future it would be better, and maybe just to quote a number, probably for 1 plus W larger than, 0.05, a distinction between the two cases should be possible, although most of the forecasts are done only in the standard region, so we're thinking about redoing this kind of analysis. Yeah.
Distinction for W less than 1 is 1. CS should be 0 for W less than 1. So there's, you don't have to do an experiment.
Yeah, yes. No, it would be, yeah. No, I see, but clearly, I'm saying that I think that the distinction between these two possibilities, anyway, forgetting about my talk, if you want, that would be interesting in the sense that, if you look at the data, there is room for having a quintessence fluid with zero speed of sound. So I would say that these two extreme limits should be taken into account, even independently from the theoretical stability arguments.
The fact that it cannot be distinguished is just because the change in the potential is proportional to 1 plus W, so it's the same potential.
What I'm saying is that
ISW comes from the potential, right?
Yes.
Are you saying that the potential only changes by a fraction 1 plus W?
Sorry, okay, you're talking about this. I'm saying that besides the standard ISW, which is the effect of the background evolution on the potential wells, here there is also the effect of this additional clustering of dark energy as you approach. But clearly, all these effects are suppressed by 1 plus W, because the clustering of quintessence is suppressed by its capital gravity. So at the moment, there are no reasonable constraints. And even if you do the analysis for speed of sound equal to zero, the contour do not change so much. So the analysis is quite not sensitive to the speed of sound of the test. Not only there are no limits, because clearly, as we are compatible with 1 plus W equal to zero, clearly you can always live there and there is no C squared is not defined. But even if you look at the contours, there is no sensibility on C squared.
What is the W? What's the horizontal axis on this graph?
Okay, so this is the W of the ground. So if you want, this is a cosmological constant, okay, for the two cases.
Right.
So we are interested in mostly this analysis of the Latin region. Mm-hmm. So just to point to what happens here is that here there is only the ground evolution. So for if you approach dark matter, clearly there is no NW. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then on this side, what happens? On this side, W is so negative that basically dark energy dominates yesterday, so there is no effect. So it goes down in both cases. Mm-hmm. Here, it's different because as I make W more negative, I also enhance the clustering of dark energy. So the effect turns out to be more important, so the effect goes up. So this is politically why there is a different behavior. What I find interesting, and we are working on this with Leonardo and others, is the idea that quintessence also participates in these models to structure formation. For example, if you take the prototypical spherical collapse of a dark matter halo, so usually, For a normal quintessence is not perturbed. So the Hubble flow of dark matter starts shrinking, but the quintessence is unperturbed. It stays following the unperturbed Hubble flow. So there is an effect of quintessence, but only through the equation of state. There is no direct participation of quintessence to structure formation. On the other hand, in this case, the quintessence participates to the collapse. And in fact, what we are trying to do is we should be able to to study in the spherical collapse case, in the spherical collapse model, the effect of quintessence on permeator deformation. Okay, so this is work in progress, but I think it's an interesting even independent of this theoretical analysis. So, but let me skip this. This is just to say, as I said, that in the limit in which 1 plus W is very small, quintessence just behaves like a cosmological constant for cosmology. You still have this dynamical degrees of freedom, which is the Gauss condensate, but this only gives short scale modification of gravity. So, for a cosmologist, there is no large scale effect. But anyway, this is for a very, very small 1 plus W. Okay, let me conclude with. In this talk I was very straightforward and pedagogical with the derivation of the Lagrangian. So, maybe a more systematic way to derive perturbations of quintessence is to use another kind of approach. So the standard approach, as I said, is you take the Lagrangian, you expand around the given solution, and you work out the prediction for perturbations. So another way that we explored with Albert and others in the past, and can be applied in the particular case of quintessence, is just to write down explicitly the theory of perturbations around the accelerated solution. So the idea is that around the time evolving solution, you can look at the symmetries of your system. Clearly, the time diffeomorphism is broken because there is a background evolution. And in unitary gauge, so in the gauge in which the scalar is set to zero, all the modification can be written as a function of the metric. Okay? So this is exactly like gauge theory. In a gauge theory, if you break one of the gauge invariants, in unitary gauge, you are just adding new terms for your gauge field, in this case for the graviton, which describes this additional degrees of freedom. So in this language, the operators I was talking about during the talk can be written as a function of the metric. Sorry, clearly these operators are not diff invariant, but this clearly shows that we are describing an additional degrees of freedom. So the good point about this is that one can be very systematic in writing down the operators. This is what I was discussing about quintessence. These are the operators that we have to take into account to stabilize it at short distances. And then there are operators which I didn't talk but they turns out to be relevant in some regime, and Alberto will probably talk about these cases. But one can be even more systematic instead of starting from an explicit Lagrangian. These can be applied to we apply this to inflation, and the same thing can be done for quintessence. Okay, let me just flash the conclusion. The conclusion, I think, the phenomenological conclusion is that I think it's interesting to study CS squared equal to zero models of quintessence. And first of all, because they are the more justified way, the more theoretically consistent way of going below in a non-energy condition violating regime. And also because the distinction between the phenomenology of these two cases is quite relevant, independently of your, it should be a quite clear distinction between two classes of models. And I summarize this in the plane that I was showing during the talk. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions?
Sorry. So you showed that we can cross the quantum divide for perturbations in this whole constant approach, CS squared is equal to zero. But so there's a lot of work done, especially in China, on the quantum matter, where you actually introduce an explicit ghost field.
Yeah.
Then you don't have CS squared equals to zero.
Yeah. Well,
then, what's the status of perturbations if you cross the quantum divide in those models?
So as I said at the beginning, these these models, they have a problem that they are describing effectively a ghost. So you have to, in some way, to cut off the instabilities on short scales. So you're asking for the perturbation crossing the divide.
In terms of the perturbation equations in Chomsky for film, there's a problem for broadcast, as you mentioned.
Yeah, because this is the if I focus on a single field, there is some.
But this is not a single field.
Then with two fields. Accepted that one is a ghost, then there is no problem. Sorry, I was in what I was showing. I was concentrating on a single fluid. If you have two fluids, then you can cross, and there is. I mean, there are no pathologies at the level of quintessence, the perturbation equation. Then there are pathologies. Another thing that I didn't mention, which is important, is that in all these, I focused on a minimal coupling. I mean, there is no direct coupling with matter, because I'm saying this because another way to have an effective equation of state W less than minus 1 is to couple in directly the quintessence with matter. So this story becomes more complicated because of the metric that matter fills depends on the scale. So here I just focused on separating the two things, so having a real violation of an energy condition and not having something which cosmological looks like. So this is another way to get W less minus 1.
Other questions?
Paolo, you didn't include a potential for your field. Am I right?
No, in this language, everything is hidden. Yes, I did. So in a sense, when I was showing the most generic Lagrangian, the potential is there. There is a term.
You allowed it to pin R on phi, not just on X.
There is a potential term, and so you see there is a potential coming from there, no? for my scalar field pi. Obviously, this is not that mean. Yes, so it is the mass of the perturbations around the solution, no? So.
Okay, so then let's have a break and come back at 10:30. Before that, let's thank you.